areas had anywhere from 5 to 7 inches. We're probably on the top end of that at 7 inches last week. So this caused us some havoc in the garden. We got out there last week when we seen this thing was going to come through there and got our taters up. Now, we was really concerned because they was ready to dig when you had all this rain coming. So we dug them wetter than we normally do. We did a video on it. If you have time, if you want to, watch the video. We're going to do a short recap of what we found because we trialed probably, what, 7 or 8 varieties this year?
Something like that, right.
New varieties that we have not grown before, or some of them we may have tried before. And to give you basically the conclusion of what we come to was 3 varieties that we really like. And I didn't bring one of the blue ones today. There's actually probably 4. But this is probably the best one that I grew this year, and it's called a Jelly.
Yeah, and I grew the Jelly last year, and this was his first year growing. And I remember telling him last year, man, last year they just outperformed all the other varieties I grew. The taste was just so much better. The size was so much better. And he got to see it for himself this year. And once again, they just outperformed every other variety.
Yeah, what I really liked about this variety is it made a lot. Very prolific in the yield. It's a yellow potato on the inside, but it was very consistent on size. Now, we've grown these red potatoes, these average red potatoes for years, but these jellies was all pretty much the same size. It was real clean. Skin on was real clean. So that's probably going to be one of my go-to varieties. The other one that I grew, which is a smaller potato, was a bluebell. Now, it's also a yellow potato, but it's got these blue markings all on it. Now, this was a nice potato to grow. It's a little bit different. It's got a little different taste to it, but this is a good potato. And also, this smaller potato called a Jester. Now, this is more of a potato salad or a salad potato. People up north in different regions of the country sometimes like to grow a smaller potato. Us here in the South, we tend to want to grow the big potatoes. This is a small potato, and it's a yellow potato inside too. And this was a very good one. Grew another one called Bluebell.
Cheshire.
No, Cheshire. Cheshire was a dark purple potato, and it made really well too. So those varieties there is what we trial this year to come out on top of our trial, and we like to grow things different every year to see what performs best for us. So some potatoes that may grow better up north may not grow well in the South, so we like to see what grows best for us in our environment.
And in my opinion, I really don't think I'm going to grow, unless I just can't get my hands on some jellies or bluebells, I think I'm going to cut these red potatoes out of the rotation. Some of mine, you know, the ground was wet, like we talked about, had all that rain. And I didn't have any disease signs on the jellies or the bluebells. Some of my reds were starting to rot a little bit. And I just think these things aren't as hardy. They're a little more susceptible as compared to these guys right here.
Yield is definitely better on this one here. And the size is a lot more consistent. That's the 2 things that blew me away. And I'll be honest with you, I like the taste better too.
Yeah. One funny thing is, you know, we really glad we had a big bumper crop of big potatoes, but Miss Hoss was canning some beans, and she was fussing that she didn't have any little. She likes to put the little potatoes in with the green beans in the jar, and she didn't have any little ones to put in there. She had to hunt and find some.
Yeah, so we set her up on some smaller ones, and they worked fine for that. So you can tell the size difference there. Now, these didn't get near this big, so if you want or needing to grow a smaller potato, there's several varieties out there. And they made real well, too, but we just have a tendency to want to grow these bigger potatoes. I guess it's what we're used to.
And those jellies and bluebells especially, we like to cut those up, put them in the oven and roast them, take you a little fresh rosemary. Smell that.
Mmm.
Good, ain't it? Different. Take you a little fresh rosemary, put on those potatoes in the oven. Man, it's really good stuff.
Yep.
All right, what else we got going on? I've got in my garden my last round of carrots growing here. And these are some orange ones here. These ones turned out really nice size. And I dug these kind of in the mud yesterday just to get them out of the ground. We got these purple ones here. Didn't get quite as big. These are a nice little flavorful variety here. And I love the smell of fresh dug carrots.
Yep. So I'm a carrot grower in progress. I'm not near the carrot grower Travis is, so he's working with me some on that. I tend to not have enough patience to grow carrots. So I did grow some this year, some smaller carrots, and I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to try to do better next year.
Yeah, I think this fall we're probably just going to have a little intervention session and go out there and do some step-by-step, some coaching, and really work on him with his carrot growing. Yeah. But I think we can get him there. It's just going to take a little
time. It's going to take a little time.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll keep you updated on how that goes. All right. So now let's get to our tool of the week segment. What do we have for the
tool of the week? So we use this on our tater digging video, and we want to showcase it today. This is our digging pole. When I say it's our digging pole, we have this made for us by a company called WW Manufacturing out of Pennsylvania. The head is forged. The head is actually imported from Austria. That's in Europe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Doing good.
Yeah.
So the head is imported. It's a hard forged head, very thick tines. The head is imported. Then they bring it in here and they weld this tubular, steel tubular handle. Now the one we sell, they make specially for us, has the foot pad on there. It has a nice rubber foot pad. Let's see if I can show you. This is a short handle and what they call a D handle. It's all steel construction. Now this pad here, it's a thick rubber, and the great thing about it is you can switch it to either side. We got it set up for right-footed people, mm-hmm. or if you left-footed, you can move it over here. Just two bolts, you can take it and move it off. So every one that we sell comes standard with this foot pad on there. But I'm going to tell you something. This is a heavy-duty fork. If you do not want a heavy-duty fork, this ain't you. This is for you out there that's broken a few of them wood handles before. You ain't going to break this right here. You know, working it by hand. Now, you may run it with a tractor or something like that, but you ain't gonna break it by hand, I guarantee you. So this is what we call our heavy-duty digging fork. Let's see if I can get right here. And this is what we use to dig our taters with.
Yeah, and this tubing here is what they call aircraft quality tubing.
Yep.
So it's fine stuff. That weld right there on the forks is just pretty as you've ever seen, and that ain't bending and going nowhere. My old buddy,
right.
Tom Matthews on our Road by Road group was saying the other day, he had contacted me a year or so ago, and his brother had broke his digging fork trying to dig up roots, and I said, well, if you get you one of these, I promise you, you won't break it.
We've sold hundreds of them, if not thousands, and we've not had the first complaint about our digging fork.
And this time of year, in previous years, when it gets around tater digging time, we about can't keep them in stock.
Right.
We just got a fresh pallet of them in, and so get them while they're here. All right. So, show and tell, we had our tool of the week. Now let's get into the main meat of today's show, which is talking about squash.
Squash.
So, we're going to talk about summer squash first, then winter squash, and then a little bit about best practices. So, my squash this year, I put them on that new plot that I got over there on the other side of my property. And I usually plant squash on about 5 foot spacing. And man, I should have given more room this year. I've got a squash forest. I don't know what's got them going so well. Man, they're doing good this year and just picking squash a bunch. I can barely get in there. Good problem to have, but got several different varieties and squash has seemed to be doing well even with the wet weather we've had.
I noticed that my squash did better when I put down some good compost. I had an area that I planted some squash, and I put down some manure and good compost in that area there, and it outperformed earlier crop that I had that I didn't throw as much fertilizer to. So some of these compost and some of these organic fertilizers can really make those summer squash pump it out because they grow so quick. I mean, we're on our second, I'm on my second crop of squash.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, if we plant our summer squash every 2 to 3 weeks, we can have a steady supply all the way through, and we can start picking squash easily by the 1st of May, if not before then. And as they fall off production, we got a new crop coming on there. So about every 2 weeks, I tend to plant another crop of them.
So with summer squash, things to think about, summer squash is something you're going to be harvesting often. You know, I try to pick mine every other day. I like mine on the smaller side. I think the taste is a little better. I don't want to let them get real huge. The fruits just are a little better when they're small. Squash, you want to make sure you can plant summer squash earlier than you can winter squash. So we can plant summer squash pretty early. He had a really early planting. I came in behind that. Our second plantings are about in sequence, and then I think I'm gonna try one more planting here where I had my taters. pressure and disease pressure will get pretty high towards June and so, but I can usually squeeze in one more plant in the squash. So you want to make sure you succession plant it early, harvest often to keep getting those fruits.
Yeah, squash is a quick crop. I mean, you can make squash in 45 days, and it's fairly easy to grow. So anybody that's beginning gardening, that's definitely one thing you want to start with there, because it's easy to be successful with them. Now let's get into some different varieties, because some people may not know there's a lot of options out there when it comes to growing squash.
Right, so let's show them what most people grow, and then we'll get into what the varieties we like.
Okay, this is the old-time crookneck. Now you don't see this much in the stores anymore because they sell in the straight neck. But if you go to your feed and seed store and you buy the I hate to say the cheapest, but the most common squash for gardens out there, you're gonna buy this variety right here, which is old crookneck, and you kind of see this little rough skin right there, and it's got this, it's what they call a crookneck on it right here. This variety's been growing for years. This is basically what everybody has grown in the past. When I was coming up, that's the only one I knew of. However,
so nothing wrong with growing that crookneck, but there are, over time, through selective breeding, there's been some varieties that have been improved that look like the crookneck, but they just got a little better taste to them.
Yep.
And then, was it this past summer, we took a trip to Maine? We took a trip to Maine, we were with a group and took a tour at Johnny C's, and we actually did some blind taste testing on some different squash varieties.
That's right, we weren't blind, but they actually did show us what we were eating. So they
weren't blindfolded, but we didn't know which ones.
But they set us in a room and they had all these varieties cut up out there. And they tasted them raw, which I thought was interesting. But I understood after we got through all this what they were doing. So
this variety here is a new one that they just come out with. It's called Tempest, and this one here is a little bruised up from being beat around in the refrigerator. But it's got these little ribs on it right here. The neck on it is a little thicker than your standard crookneck. This is about as, they'll get much bigger than this, but this is about as big as I want to let them get. And these have just a little more flavor to them than your regular crookneck do.
Well, this variety, I'm not going to say it was bred exclusively to be eaten raw, but it was bred with the intentions of marketing it as a raw eaten variety. So that's the way we taste test it, and they've done a lot of research Johnny has on eating these vegetables raw and see which ones taste better. And this is one of the varieties that come out on top. If you'll notice also how clean it is. The old-timey crookneck we used to grow was a little rough. But these are clean skin varieties. They have little white streaks in there. And they are very good eating raw. They have some very unique flavors to them.
Yeah, the first time we cooked these, my wife was like, these are some of the best squash I've ever eaten. So really want a good taste in squash, and these are prolific as well. It's not like some of your heirlooms, you may lose a little productivity. Really productive and some of the best tasting kind of traditionally shaped squash that you'll find.
All right, this one right here is called the
Zephyr.
This is also a variety we got from Johnny's. It's a little bit more slender than the one we just showed you here, and it has this green tip on it right here that's, you know, you can see and you know exactly what kind you got. You know, it makes really well, more slender, also has some of those unique varieties to eat raw. And this is one of the ones we've grown this year as well.
Yeah, and if you do any little market farming on the side or whatever,
yeah,
this variety right here will stand out a little more as opposed to just regular old yellow crookneck. So this Zephyr is a great one as well.
All right, now this is one I've grown for a couple of years now. I think I actually grew it maybe 3 years ago at the Expo. I got it from Clifton Seed Company, but you're starting to see a lot of this one in your supermarkets, and it's being commercially grown a lot because it's different. It is a yellow zucchini. This particular one's called Golden Dawn. They make really well. They're disease resistant. They have done well for us. It's just different. Yellow zucchini, and I've grown them. I grew two crops of them this year, and I think I grew one crop of them last year. We really like them. Market farmers, they're again something different. So if you're doing markets, it's definitely something unique, you know, for your customers out there.
And Johnny's has a variety, looks really similar to this, called Gold Mine, except it's got some white stripes on the side. And we've grown that one as well, and really good. I really like these yellow zucchinis. As far as green zucchinis go, I'm always looking for additions to the seed selection where we, you know, they come out with new, more productive varieties. I really like to go for uniformity in my squash. Yep. I like them to be all the same size. And I like to pick them. My zucchinis, I like them to be about this size right here.
Yeah, that's a variety called Green Magic.
Green Machine.
Green Machine, excuse me.
And so this is a, this variety here has a really good disease package, resistant to a lot of your common squash diseases, and the fruits are pretty uniform. I can get them all about this size right here, which I really like, but easier to cut them up for cooking. They don't get too big and pithy on you.
Yeah, so there's a lot of really unique varieties out there, and this is one right here called Patty Pan that we've grown for a couple of years. This is a weird shape right here, and you have to think about eating squash differently. You have to cut these up a little different. Cut them up in chunks, and you can saute them or whatever. It's not probably a variety I'd like to eat raw because they do get a little thick in there, but as far as sauteing or any type of stews or anything, I have not fried them. I think they're really unique. They make a lot. So if you plant these right here, you'd be really surprised how much they turn out. They do good at farmers markets. It's something unique to grow. They make well, and they're good. You just have to think about cooking them a little bit different than what you normally would a regular squash.
Yeah, and this particular variety here is called Sunburst, and there's a green Patty Pan, a white one. I like this variety right here, and I just kind of cut them up, you know, like a pie, and they're really good on the grill and chunks or whatever.
Try that.
We really like those. So
now, we grew some eight balls. I grew some eight balls years ago. There's a particular, and we don't have one here today, because I didn't grow any this year, but there's some varieties that are round, mm-hmm. and they're called eight balls. They're different. I just really didn't care a lot for them, so I didn't grow them any this year. I may try them again later sometime.
Yeah, they didn't do as well for me. They're okay, but I like the ones we showed a little better.
Yeah.
All right, so that's summer squash. So definitely try some of those varieties. We've done the testing for you, and we promise you'll like them. Now let's get into winter squash a little bit. And so winter squash, there's a misconception that means you grow it in the winter. The terminology winter squash, not necessarily down here, but in northern states, it's because you plant it in the spring or the summer and then harvest in the winter because it's a longer maturation period on the fruits.
That means it'll last longer.
Yeah. So you're gonna plant winter squash once, maybe twice. You might plant some more in the fall. You're gonna plant it once. You're gonna really just harvest it once because you're gonna wait till those plants die back a little bit. You gotta wait till that stem hardens a little bit. You're gonna go out there and harvest them, and then they'll store for, you know, several months.
Yeah, I think as far as somebody that's gonna grow their own food, I think you got to be growing winter squash, and simply because, well, they're good to eat, but they store so well.
Right.
Some of these varieties will store up to 6 months. Now, some of them won't store that long, but anything you can grow and keep for up to 6 months is a great food supply to have on hand. If you're interested in growing your own food and being healthy, knowing what you're eating, you definitely got to incorporate some of these winter squash into what you grow.
Yeah, and so let's go through a few of the different kinds that we like to grow quickly here. The first one, everybody's probably seen a spaghetti squash before, and spaghetti squash normal ones probably get about that big, size of a football, like an NFL football. I've tried this variety for the last 3 years called Angel Hair, and it makes a smaller one, more like a personal size spaghetti squash. Really good, really prolific. You can get about anywhere from 14 to 15 fruits per plant, and they store really well. So,
and one of the reasons because of that variety, they bred it down for that size to be more of a personal size variety. Because don't everybody need a huge squash. If it's just two people in your family that you're trying to feed, you can buy something smaller. Or, you know, these smaller varieties are perfect for small families.
Yeah, and it seems like you get more per plant. They're just smaller. And then we've got acorn squash, which is my personal favorite. We'll talk about his personal favorite next. But the acorn, as far as taste-wise, are my favorite. And I've been growing the variety the last 2 years that Johnny's came out with called Tip Top. And it's a powdery mildew-resistant acorn squash. And that powdery mildew resistance is really important on your longer stuff like winter squash, because once that heat starts coming in, get all this moisture, that resistance is an important component of that plant to have.
Yeah, these winter squash are fun to grow, but being it takes them so long, you can have a lot of problems with downy mildew and powdery mildew out there. So that is some of the issues. Another issue is some insects we'll get into a little bit later. But some of these short-term summer squash, you won't have the issues that you might have with these winter squash. The trade-off is the winter squash will have great taste and they store well. So.
Right. And then the last one, which is his favorite, I'll let you tell him about that.
Delicata. So of all the ones that we've grown before, Travis mentioned the acorn. The great thing about the acorn is it'll store up to 6 months. Well, the one I like the best is called Delicata, and this one I grew this year. The problem with Delicata is it don't store for about 30 days. It has a very short storage life. But it has a very sweet, very nutty, good taste to us. What we do is cut them in half, bust them open. We roast them, grill them, stuff them. It's just our personal favorites, the Delicata. They seem to have a little higher sugar content than some of the rest of them does. The downfall is the storage. They make somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 fruits per plant. So you get pretty good yield or bang for your buck on the area that you plant them in your garden.
Yeah, so they're not quite as productive as, say, the angel hair or the acorn, but like you said, the sweetness is really there. The quality of the food is really, really nice. So you kind of make a little trade-off there.
Yeah, and you know, the great thing is grow several of these varieties and see which one you like best, because you know, you may like something different than what we do.
Right. All right, so definitely give those winter squash a try. And then, let's just talk about best practices with squash real quick. Like, I personally think that one of the reasons my squash is looking so good this year is it's because it's on a new plot. Nothing's been grown there in a long, long time. Definitely not squash. And I've got some buddies who do some commercial squash production, and they stay on at least a 3-year rotation. And so I think with crops like squash, crop rotation is extremely important to having that healthy crop.
It is, and even if you're not, don't think you're that well of a gardener, or if you're challenged in some areas of gardens, these summer squash are definitely easy to grow, especially early in the year because the pest pressure is way down if you grow them early in spring. As you get on into summer and the fall, the game changes. But just about anybody can grow these summer squash early on without any insecticide or fungicide treatments.
Yeah, just don't plant them in the same spot every year, because you'll get that spore build up to start having some disease issues. The one other thing I want to mention that I've had problems with in the past that requires a little bit of preventative control are these things called pickle worms.
Yes.
And pickle worms are the larval stage of a certain kind of moth. The name escapes me what moth it is. But what they'll do is they'll bore holes in your cucumbers, your squash. They can even get in that thick winter squash skin.
Well, actually, I have more trouble with those in my winter squash than I do my summer squash, simply because I think that plant is there longer. It gives them more opportunity to grow the population to get into it. So I seem to have more problems with pickle worms in my winter squash than I do my summer squash. Now, several insecticides, and I say insecticides, these natural insecticides will control this pickle worm. The key there is doing some rotation. Your neem oils, your spinosad, and also your BTs will all work on this pickle worm, but you definitely need to do a rotation. I would at least rotate every other time I sprayed to one of these different insecticides to change up my mode of action. Spinosad and BT, I know for a fact, didn't have any resistance. The neem oil is going to give you 2 punches. It's a stomach poison, plus it's also a contact. So all 3 of these will work. Just hit them at different times.
Yeah, and you want to, if you know you're going to have a pickle worm problem, hit them with that BT early. Because once those worms bore into your fruit, you ain't got any way to kill them. So hit them early, and you should be successful with that.
Now, if you're planning on growing some of these summer squash or these winter squash later in the year for a fall crop, you definitely going to have some problems with some of the mildews out there. Downy is probably my biggest problem on the winter squash if I'm trying to grow them in the fall of the year or the late summer. Now, you got to really pay attention to this, and you start seeing those signs, you're going to have to use some type of fungicide treatment.
All right. Thanks for that. Hopefully, gave you some good tips there for growing your squash, and I hope everybody has a great squash crop this year. Towards the end of the show here, when we always like to get to some of your questions and answer some of those. As always, if we answer your question on the show, you get one of these really highly coveted Hoss koozies here. If we do answer your question, please send us an email to custserved@hosstools.com with your shipping address, and we'll get your koozie in the mail. So, let's get to the first one here. And the first question, not really a question, more of a comment, is from Charmaine. And she was watching last week's show, and she said she'd been growing corn for over 30 years, and she didn't know that the tassels pollinated the silks on the corn. And we did a video about this several years ago, but I kind of wanted to just give a little demonstration here. So this is our tassel. I sacrificed some of this off my sweet corn this morning. This is our tassel. This is the male flower, the plant. I'll let you hold that. And the pollen grains on here, which they're all about gone right now, are pink. You'll see them. They usually have a pink color to them. And those are going to fall down and pollinate these silks here. So every silk on this ear of corn represents a kernel. So if all of these silks get pollinated with pollen from up here, we get a full ear of corn.
Yep.
There's way more than enough pollen up here for this. Down here, we have plenty of wind and water. We don't really have issues with pollination. In some areas, I've seen people take cane poles and kind of brush it over the top to get pollination. And let's take a look and see what we got here. Still kind of in the milky stage. We got a nice full ear there, corn.
Yep. Now, one of the problems that I see with beginning gardeners make is they want to plant two or three long rows of corn, and that causes some problem with your germination. When you plant corn, especially in a small garden situation, you want to plant it in blocks, like square blocks, and your pollination is going to be a lot better there than planting one or two long rows, because if you plant that one or two long rows, you can definitely set yourself up to have some pollination issues. When you get those pollination issues, your corn don't fill out. So you'll have a lot of skips in your corn. So plant that corn in squares or blocks. If you're going to plant a shorter row, but plant more of them, so pollination works for you a lot better.
Sometimes I just have to shake my head. Some stuff I see on some of these Facebook groups, not ours, but some of the other ones, people were asking the other day, could they grow their corn in a circle or a triangle? It's just... just seems like, you know, what's the point of that?
Why?
Just plant it in a square, and you'll get optimal results that way. All right. So, Charmaine, thank you for that question. Send us your address, and we'll be glad to get that koozie to you. The second question, our last question today, is from Chris. And Chris isn't actually that far from us. He's up the road in Augusta, Georgia, and wants to know what we do for ants. He said he has ants bad in his garden, especially after the rain. They're just relentless. Wants to know what we do for that.
Well, Chris, I'm in the same situation with you, and I got a little bit of background here, so we'll talk for just a second about ants. If you're wanting to go, you don't care synthetic, commercially, or whatever, and you don't want zero ants, there's a product out there called Fipronil that is hands down the best thing on ants. But in my garden situation, I don't want to use Fipronil. I want to use something natural because I don't want to contaminate what I meet. So the best product out there that is an organic control for ants is a product called Spinosad. Now, the Spinosad has to be in the bait formation for the ants to eat it, carry it back to the queen, and eliminate the colony. You can't simply spray Spinosad out there. You have to put it in a bait so that it's carried through that process. Now, there's a couple of different ways you can do that. The one we sell is this one right here, and this has iron phosphate and Spinosad in there, and this is a sugar bait system there for ants. Another one that they sell is called Conserve, and it has more of a starch or corn-based bait, and the bait is what's really important there. So the ant has to take this, carry it back to the colony, and eliminates the colony. You have to treat these a little bit different than you would a regular insecticide. You want to put these out there in the middle of the day when the ants are feeding. And ants normally feed on sugar-based or starch-based, and we don't really know which one they do at a particular time. That's the reason sometimes we have issues using these organic controls with fighting ants, because they may be feeding on starches that day and we put a sugar bait out there, or vice versa. So you can get you some Conserve. You could use this one right here. Put it out there. Make sure they're feeding on it there. And it takes a couple of 3 days for this process to go through and kill the queen, but you don't move them. And you probably need to do this about 3 times a year. So using a bait system with the active ingredient being Spinosad is the way to go in your garden for your natural control. Worry-free, you don't have to worry about toxic pesticides out there, and that's what I do.
Yeah, and if you ever notice the ant beds and ants always come up in the places where there's not a whole lot of mechanical disturbance. You know, they don't like to be constantly disturbed. So where you're normally cultivating your garden every week, you don't necessarily see the ant beds there. You'll see them on the edges where you're not walking or less foot traffic where you'll see those ants.
Yeah, when you have a wet year, like we've had this year, a lot of rain, you're going to have more ants than you would in a dry year. So they seem to pop up a lot more often than after a big rain.
Yeah, nothing worse than stepping in a bed of fire ants. All right, so that does it for this week's show. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Catch us next week where we're going to talk a little bit about okra.
Okra.
And we'll see you then.
All right.